This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Closing statements in the trial of admitted marathon bomber Jahar Tsarnaev are set for Monday. The defense rested its case yesterday. And today, the courtroom is quiet. So we thought we'd use the opportunity to step back and take a close look at Tsarnaev's lawyer, Judy Clark.
She was the attorney who stood before jurors a little more than 2 weeks ago and declared he did it. Tsarnaev isn't the first high-profile criminal she's represented. Her client list includes Unabomber Ted Kaczynski, Atlanta Olympics bomber Eric Rudolph, and Al-Qaeda operative Zacharias Moussaoui.
In each case, Clark defended the indefensible. But in each case, Clark's goal wasn't forgiveness for the crimes, but rather an attack on society's maximum punishment, the death penalty. As Mark Bowden writes in the most recent issue of Vanity Fair, quote, among those who want capital punishment abolished in this country, Judy Clark is the most effective champion in history. Mark Bowden joins us now. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Meghna.
So you have written this long, detailed profile of Judy Clark, and it's absolutely fascinating. And I wonder if we could actually kind of start at the beginning of her life, because one might assume that such a strong opponent of the death penalty has liberal leanings or tendencies, but that assumption is completely wrong. She comes from a rather conservative background. Can you tell us a little bit about her family?
Yeah, her family in South Carolina were John Birchers, but they were a family that loved argumentation. So they would sit around a large custom-made table at dinner time and argue out the issues of the day. And so I really think it was more the influence of argument and forming, rigorous positions on the spot that was the influence more than the right-leaning politics themselves.
Right. I mean, and in fact, their passion and commitments to their personal ideals, not necessarily political ones, shines through. I mean, you write about the fact that at one time her parents were strong supporters of the late North Carolina Senator Jesse Helms, but
right.
Then her brother, their youngest son, died of AIDS, and Helms basically wouldn't extend any sympathy to him. So Judy Clark's mother founds an organization called Mothers Against Jesse in Congress.
Yeah, she wasn't just angry. She was determined to do everything she could to strike back. And so it gives you some insight into Judy Clark, not just as a person who quietly holds opinions, but who rather acts very aggressively on them.
Yeah. And I really appreciate the background and research that you did for this, because you also note that Judy Clark does not give interviews very often, and she declined to speak to you directly. But you did dig up some previous interviews and talks that she'd given. And she is quoted as saying that she's not a liberal at all. She says, what does it take to be an absolute supporter of what the Constitution says? That's hardly liberal. I don't smoke dope. I don't snort cocaine. I'm not into drugs. You associate that with a liberal view of a lawyer, and I'm not into that.
That's right. And, she has, her own way of interpreting the Constitution. And I think that it doesn't fall neatly into any category, except very clearly the primary thrust of her work for the last few decades has been against the death penalty.
Right. So let's talk about that, because she was obviously enamored of the law as a young woman. But how is it that she actually got into this particular line of work? It begins in 1994 with the Susan Smith case. Can you remind us about that?
Yeah. Susan Smith was the young mother who strapped her two boys in car seats and then drove her car into a lake and let them drown. And in the days following, went on television to claim that her boys had been abducted by a black man, which prompted a lot of fear in the community and massive manhunts until the police determined that, in fact, Smith had done this to her own children.
Mm. And as you write, in defending Smith in this case, Judy Clark, first of all, she and her team are absolutely meticulous and exhaustive in looking into Susan Smith's background, her personal life, her story. It's basically a tactic that we're seeing at play today in the Tsarnaev case, is it not?
It is, yeah. And she has said that the Susan Smith case is the one that, as she put it, had sucked her into the black hole of death penalty cases. And I think, you know, what she set out to do was to reconstruct Susan Smith's entire life up to the point where she made the terrible decision to kill her children, in order not to convince a jury that they should forgive her for the unforgivable, but rather that she basically give them some spark of understanding of how this could have happened and how Susan Smith could have arrived at that point. And that's what's proven to be so effective, is she's not trying to win forgiveness. She's trying to just engender just enough understanding to prevent her clients from being executed.
Hmm. And I think it's worth spending another minute or two on the Susan Smith case, because it seems so revealing to me, not just in terms of where Judy Clark's personal philosophy in her opposition to the death penalty comes from, but also just her methodology in court. Because while she spends a lot of time uncovering the fact that Susan Smith, you know, was abused by her stepfather, she tried to commit suicide twice, she was in a series of very dysfunctional relationships, she also doesn't oppose the prosecution's move to not have cameras in the courtroom, which turns out the prosecutor that you spoke with later said that maybe shouldn't have been, that wasn't such a good idea, that he wished there had been cameras in the courtroom. Why?
Well, Tommy Pope was the prosecutor there, and he's since been elected to the legislature. He's sort of a good old boy who was basically thrust into the position of prosecuting Susan Smith. And what he observed in the courtroom was how Susan Smith would sort of turn on her tears and remorse when the jurors were in the courtroom, and when they left, she would be doodling and drawing pictures and laughing with people in the audience. So he had thought if there were cameras there, maybe some of that would have come across. But Tommy Pope felt outmaneuvered by Judy Clark from the beginning of that case, and concedes quite readily that he was in over his head.
Yeah. You know, Judy Clark says of the Susan Smith case that she saw what the death penalty does to us. What do you think she meant by that?
Well, you know, of course, I can only speculate, but I think that she feels that it is a remnant of another age, and she feels that, you know, she calls it legalized homicide. She thinks it coarsens, I think, American society. It coarsens our view of and respect for human life, and I, you know, I just think she feels that it's time we got past it, and she's done a great deal to make sure that that's happening.
Mm. It's interesting because that seems to make the root of her opposition to the death penalty grounded in, you know, a solidly humanist tradition. But at the same time, we talked a little earlier about the fact that she comes from this conservative background. So is there also sort of a pure small-c conservatism at play here, just a resistance to the power of the state?
I think that's very, very true, Magna. I think that that does flow from that really base-level conservatism that she grew up with. I think she feels that the state shouldn't have this power. And she also believes, and she said this in a number of occasions indirectly, that somehow the acts committed by these terrible killers are evidence of mental illness, that the act itself is a sign of mental illness, and that it somehow is cruel and unusual to put these people to death.
Yeah, and we should spend a second talking about how far she's willing to go on this point. And I mean, Ted Kaczynski, the story of Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, is a perfect one here. You write about it in the article that he actually did not want her to pursue the line of defense that she was pursuing, essentially the, you know, some version of the insanity defense, and didn't even want her as his lawyer, but she blocked that.
Right. You know, he claims that she kept the truth from him about how she planned to present his case in court, which was an insanity plea. And so when he learned that he was going to be portrayed as insane in this effort to spare his life, he was furious, because his whole his rationale for killing people was to popularize this very elaborate theory he had constructed about the impact of technology in modern society. And so if he were found in a or pleaded insane in a courtroom, this obviously would undermine the import of his life's work. And so when he learned that she planned to plead him insane, he stood up in the courtroom and demanded that he be able to represent himself and tried to fire her.
And the judge did not allow that to happen. And you write how she, when the judge hands down that little ruling, she puts her hand on Kaczynski's shoulder as an act of compassion, saying, "I'm sorry, but yes, I am still your lawyer." I mean, it's really remarkable, because this sort of brings us to this big question that you pose in this piece about Judy Clark herself. Because, you know, as you mentioned, the root of her opposition to the death penalty comes from, in part, this belief that the sheer act, the heinousness of these acts performed by these people that she defends, she believes is a sign of some sort of illness, sickness in their mind, that something is fundamentally wrong with them, and the state should not impose a death penalty upon people like that. But I wonder if you see the Tsarnaev case as a test insofar as how far that philosophy can go. Because, as you point out, I mean, Tsarnaev was a well-integrated member of Cambridge society. Just because he may be a follower of his brother doesn't necessarily mean that there's something fundamentally wrong with him.
Yeah, I mean, there doesn't appear to be. And I think it's a tough sell, what she's trying to do. She's not going to, I think, create a great deal of sympathy for him with this jury. And everything that we know about Tsarnaev shows that he was a fairly typical teenager who made this choice. And as we know, sadly, you know, many young Muslim men are, you know, deciding to side with this extremist point of view and who feel justified in killing in the name of their cause. So the fact that he, along with his brother, embraced this philosophy and went out and killed is, you know, are they all crazy? Are they all insane? I don't think so. I think that's a very difficult line to sell.
Well, we'll see how she does, because thus far she's been pretty successful in keeping her clients out of the death chamber, for lack of a better term. Most of the cases have been pleaded out. Mark Bowden, author and contributor to Vanity Fair. His most recent piece in the magazine is called "Jahar Tsarnaev Has the Most Ferocious Lawyer in America Defending Him." That, of course, is Judy Clark. Mark Bowden, thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Stay with us. Coming up, March Madness and the intersection of sports and politics, plus assessing the Red Sox ahead of this new season. I'm Anthony Brooks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.